The distinctive tones of Lem's balisari reached them as they approached the edge of the blue and red pavilion. Only a few dozen folks were there. The majority of the crowd would come later, after shopping the booze and playing a few games. Sitting atop a stool, on a raised dais, at the opposite end, was Lem, his instrument gripped tightly between his knees as he plucked out a jaunty tune. Mariah's heart raced. His auburn curls fell around his shoulders, the claret shirt he wore accentuating his olive complexion. He was built thicker than most, even more so than Kiro, who was quite tall. Celine would say anything she wanted. Mariah thought him the most beautiful boy she'd ever seen. His balisari, an unusual instrument and considered one of the most difficult to master, had a teardrop-shaped body and two necks, one broad, one narrow, joined at the top by an elegantly carved headstock that fanned out like the tails of a bird. A rich burgundy finish was beginning to dull from years of wear, with the gold underlay around the outer body and the swirling up of the both necks was still strikingly beautiful. Seeing them approach, Lem abruptly ended the melody and signaled for his small crowd that he'd be taking a short break. He wrapped Mariah in a tight hug and placed Kiro in a fond slap on the shoulder. "Good to see you, Kiro. How goes the apprenticeship?" Several disgruntled remarks drew their attention. The small crowd was growing, and newcomers were wondering why there was no music. "I'll tell you later," said Kiro. Lem nodded, then gave Mariah a light kiss on the top of her nose. "Are you staying? What do you think?" Lem picked up his instrument, and the peevish voices quickly quieted as he remounted the dais and resumed playing. Mariah and Kiro found a spot nearby to sit and listen. The first song, Stars in the Water, was a tribute to the Sunflow River. It was a happy little tune, with a bouncing rhythm that urged several of the spectators to their feet, who danced about and sang along with the lyrics. The second, The Tree of Valari's Soul, was a more serious affair and one of Mariah's favorites. It told of dark times and wicked deeds, when war and death had plagued the land, and how, in the end, the wise founders had banished the evils of magic and conflict to create a new paradise, Valari. It was an old song, said to have been written at the founding, although admittedly Mariah was unsure how true that was. No one really knew when Valari had been founded or when the barrier that kept it safe was created. Truth be told, no one much cared. Valari existed and was protected, and that was enough. "I know," Mariah sighed, "but it's a nice dream." It was a long silence. Mariah could sense there was something on Lem's mind. Lem played for a few more hours, taking short breaks to sit with Mariah. Her friend Celine came by once, though she stayed only long enough to tell Mariah that they were leaving the festival to meet at the east bank, the Sunflow. Mariah promised to join them after Lem had finished for the night, though she knew it was a lie even as she said it. Lem was only going to be home for another day before heading north to Gunderton, which of the five towns in Valari hosted the largest of the harvest festivals. But as much as she wanted to go with him, there was simply too much work to be done at home. The booths were starting to close down for the night, and the crowd was thinning as people began making their way home. It was nearly midnight now. Mariah knew they needed to start back, too. As they exited the festival grounds, a chill air blew in from the north, sending a shiver through Mariah's entire body. "Winter's coming early this year," she said, folding her arms to her chest. "That's what Shemi said, too." Lem was doing his best to keep her warm. "Where was your uncle tonight?" she asked. Lem shrugged. "Who knows? I didn't see him while I was playing, probably wandering around here somewhere." And so we join the Bard's Blade. Today's story opens, as do so many fantasy novels, sending us into a land different from our own in ways that let us know we're not in Kansas anymore, yet offering us a sense of the novel's world close enough in outline, and even in warp and woof, to our own to be comfortable for us as readers. Hopefully you heard that in those opening words. The land to which we are introduced in The Bard's Blade is Valari, a bubble land suspended in place thanks to a powerful magical force that both hides the land and its inhabitants from the larger world, and at the same time seems to have imbued its inhabitants with a docile, rural-based community mindset. Within the very first pages, we're introduced to a modern-day fairy tale, therefore, a land populated by good-hearted, fallible characters and families whose incuriosity about the world outside their community has, according to their own lore, kept them safe from the horrors of the neighboring land they know as Lemuria, a land of magic, mayhem, and death. Their land, Valari, is contrastingly quiet. An oxen-driven culture where horses are unknown, though cattle are common enough, and summer festivals, which we just joined, are joyful night celebrations that sometimes spill over onto the shores of the land's quiet Sunflow River. Our story features a bard whose talent for folk music offers him a sufficient income to keep him and his elderly uncle in hearth and home. But into this reservoir of quiet peace and tranquility, a stranger from a long, previously unvisited land of Lemuria appears one fateful day. A larger-than-life stranger who babbles that he is a member of the previously unknown Order of Thomas before falling into a fever-induced breakdown. With him, the stranger brings a parchment scroll inscribed with a cryptic message about an evil creature of fire and death coming to destroy the land, and the only person who can best the evil creature's power. That man, of course, is our humble bard, a young man by the name of Lem. And so it comes to pass that our young and oh-so-talented Lem summons his courage and leaves his beloved land of Valari through the magic portal through which the stranger had come, Lem leaving behind his beloved Uncle Shemmy and his feisty, betrothed vineyard mistress and neighbor, Mariah. Not to be outdone, Lem's two besties follow him through the magic portal, through the unexplored and fearful world of Lemuria, not really by choice as much as by accident, as it turns out. And Mariah and Shemmy then begin their own search. Theirs for Lem. Even for Lem, with the day's advance on his friends, seeks to discover the meaning of the cryptic parchment words in a land of strange beasts, horses, and locals, who read to me for all the world like a backward glance into the world of the old TV western, Gunsmoke. Well, in that frontier town, Lem escapes the clutches of the scheming Miss Kitty, let's call her, the matron of the tavern, the first Lemurian who takes Lem into her home. But as a part of her nefarious bargain of room and board, all but holds Lem as her captive musician, his nightly jam sessions delighting her tavern's patron, but leaving Lem increasingly desolate, despairing of ever leaving the rough and tumble frontier town that he had just entered. And so Lem sneaks away to join up with an assassin-led theater group, who, as luck would have it, are leaving the frontier town to make their way to the region's largest city, where Lem's eyes almost literally pop out of his head as he gapes at the luxury, the massive numbers of residents, the complex society this pre-industrial megatopolis portrays. Lem is not in Valari anymore. Mischief and mayhem continue to ensue, along with a not-so-subtle commentary on the dire consequences when religion and state merge. Lem, 19 years old when we first meet him, and when he first breaks through the magical barrier, leaving his beloved land behind, comes of age and discovers the dangers of the wide world quickly, not without physical and psychic pain. His erstwhile companions, his betrothed Mariah, and his beloved Uncle Shemmy find themselves captured by the religious radicals and put into layers of state power, their only hope to someday find and reunite themselves with Lem keeps their spirits alive and their bodies in one piece as they suffer torture after trumped-up charges are put against them as heretics in this strange land. Now, while some critics find Lem and his would-be companions incredibly naive, I'll argue that it's all part of the fantasy novel setup. Lem is the prototypical rural rube, well-intentioned, smart, and talented, but woefully unprepared for the larger world he discovers in so many ways. That's a character-driven example of so many of us, isn't it? Smart enough in the environments we call home, but sadly out of touch with reality in worlds we have yet to encounter. Give Lem and his fellows a break, folks. Now, to be brutally honest, The Blade of the Bard is not a successor to J.K. Rowling or J.R.R. Tolkien. though a survey of my favorite book review site offers plenty of gushingly positive reviews of the book. So, as it is often said, one person's meat is another man's hash. As another reviewer wrote, "The Bard's Blade is the first novel in a brand new series by Brian D. Anderson. This series is called The Sorcerer's Song and is understandably setting a theme, one of musical iteration. This is a fantasy series, one that flips tropes and expectations. I really liked it." Well, I've got to say that I enjoyed The Bard's Blade. I hope it is part of a longer series because I kind of got to like these characters. I think you may well, too. Give it a try, won't you? The Bard's Blade by Brian D. Anderson. It's available at all of our fine local public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.